Hello and welcome to Only Fools and Brotherly Forces, the Only Fools and Horses rewatch podcast with me, Bobby, and my brother, Jamie. Good evening, Jamie. How you doing? I suppose I should say good morning, shouldn't I?
Good morning, Bob. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm very well. I think we're ready to rumble. This is our first time recording at opposite ends of the world for a long time.
Yep, so we're back in the madness. It all started off with me in New Zealand doing a few records on different timescales. We're actually on the same hour, but 12 hours apart, so it's 8:47 in the morning for me, which I assume is the same for you in the evening.
It is indeed, yeah.
And I've had all sorts of fun trying to set up this episode, so I am staying with friends here for a few days, and while I was setting up, completely forgot the fact that one of them works very close to a Royal Air Force base, so there was a few planes going over as I was setting up, so that was fun. So you might hear a few planes. It's summer here, so it's stiflingly hot, and New Zealanders haven't yet discovered double glazing, so I've had to close all the windows so there's less noise, lots of birds and stuff coming through. But it's obviously now stiflingly hot inside because all the windows are closed to try and mute it out. And they're also their houses aren't made very, very thick, so I'm basically recording in an oven with lots of distractions around. So it should be fun.
It's going to be great. It's funny that we discuss weather because that is basically what this episode is all about. So we should probably get into it. Our episode today is It Never Rains. Yes, yeah, so as I said, all about the weather this episode, and we open with the pouring rain in London, apparently in what should be midsummer. Rain is something I'm very familiar with where I am. They say later on in this episode that it's rained for 4 days straight, which I guess is quite a lot for midsummer, but really, for me, that's not particularly dramatic. Where I am is infamous for the rain. I believe the record is of like the mid-80s number of days rain in a row. It's been nothing but storms and crap for the whole of January here. It's been bloody horrible.
That's properly obscene. I did think that it just reminds me of England as soon as I saw the rain outside. It's a shame because England is glorious in the summer, but I don't know. I whenever I come home, it just seems like I don't get blessed with weather. It is often very rainy.
Yeah, I think I'm always a bit of the eternal optimist with weather. Like, people always say how much it rains here, and it's not very often that I'm aware of it. I always think it's slightly overplayed. I just think, there's enough sun. I remember the sunny days and the nice days, and you make the most of it. But I must admit, it's been unusually warm this January, so we've had no snow and nothing but rain and storms, and I am bloody sick of it. I'm really looking forward to the spring.
So we start in the next head after a very short look at the rain, and we've got a nice bit of banter going on straight away. So Rodney's given Del a Father's Day card, and Del very quickly realizes that he's not married, only to open it up and find out that Rodney stitched him up.
Did the not married line was a bit weird too, but I'm not married. I mean, that is not a prerequisite to having a child. I mean, even then, that seems weird to me that he'd say, but I'm not married.
They came a bit more hand in hand in those days. I think it's pretty negligible. I don't know, something about this scene, it was funny because they were kind of suffering, if you could say, in this bad time of rain and having a drink and what have you. I thought it was quite interesting. It made me think that we hadn't actually ever been in this sort of situation where we were close and working and just living through some bad times and so on. But he kind of felt it's nice to have someone close to you when things are shit that you can just kind of relax with and take away some of the pain and the boredom. You know, in most jobs you're just stuck with your colleagues, but you know, they seem to be, you know, roughing it out together, which was quite nice.
Yeah, obviously that joke of Rodney's is like a real classic, but I had actually forgotten about it. But the whole like giving someone a Father's Day card who isn't one is like a really, really old school joke. But I kind of completely forgotten it was there, so I didn't see it coming at first. And as soon as he hands over the card, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember this. This is great. But I think a perfect example of just the hard times they are having is the fact that Del also orders half a lager.
Yeah. Yeah, that was... he orders half a lager for a few seconds and then sees his mate Alec. And I thought this is a great little drink that he's done.
I'll have half a lager.
Half a lager.
Yeah, and I'll have a large Drambuie with lime, with topped up with soda, lots of ice, slice of lemon and a little cherry on the top.
Two halves of lager, love.
It seems a long way of just saying Drambuie on the rocks, isn't it? I mean, that's essentially what it is. It's added. I like the embellishments.
Yeah, with a little bit of seasonal fruits. But I was thinking we should name some of these drinks because it's hard to reference them as we go through because there's so many different wild ones. Some of them he does name, but yeah, we need to think about a name so we can reference them again and have that in our memory.
Well, the only time I've ever had Drambuie is at a wedding. A friend of ours, well, the uncle of a friend of ours, recommended a drink for us all to be doing shots of at this wedding, and it was Drambuie with a couple of drops of Tabasco. You were there, do you remember this?
Yeah, I got massively drunk, and I'm pretty sure I insulted someone.
So we were doing shots of Drambuie with drops of Tabasco in it, and I believe he called it a red dragon.
Yeah, I didn't think you were there.
I was there, how dare you?
Even though it wasn't spicy, we can refer to that one as the Red Dragon. That's fine by me. A nice, quick, off-the-cuff joke from Alex. So after he orders or suggests the elaborate drink, Alex just says half a lager, which is nice. Nice little quick-firing joke there. And they have a little chat about Alex's business is struggling for some holidays, which is funny because it's pissing down with rain, so you'd think everyone would be up for going out and buying a holiday.
As he said, everyone's skint, that's the problem.
Everyone is skint. So Del has a little chat with him, and it was a pretty rubbish idea. I mean,
he invents the sale. I mean, it's hardly like the school of Del, like, you know, business school according to Del. It's pretty basic stuff, but Alex seems wowed by this, the idea of a, you know, first come first serve sale concept,
and somehow Alex gobbles it up and decides it's a great idea, and Del walks over to the table.
Fancy holiday?
Can't afford an holiday.
Yes, we can. Alex, special offer anywhere in the world, 80% off.
He'll go fast.
Yeah, I know he will. I know. That's what I told him, but he wouldn't listen. You know what he's like.
And again, Del's just showing some great nous to set himself up in a really bad time to get himself a nice cheeky holiday. And he says to Rodney he needs to go and earn some pocket money. And just as he's pretty much telling him he needs to go outside, you can hear thunder and the rain pissing down. And we get a nice short cut to Rodney trying to sell the sun hats in the pissing rain.
Genuine Italian sun hat!
Which is literally like a second shot. But I remember it so well. It's a really, really memorable shot.
It's a very good example of the type of shit that Rodney has to do. The whole thing with Alec is interesting. I wonder at what point throughout the conversation did he have the idea if this was an opportunity for him, or if at first he generally thought he might be suggesting a favour or something. You know what I mean? Like, was he trying to help him out with an idea? Because it could work. It's not a particularly unique or special concept, but at the same time he's taken advantage of the opportunity. I wonder how parallel those two ideas were.
I don't think it works at all. Like, if you hear next person in the shop gets 80% off, you don't stumble in there, not be the first person in, and think, well, while I'm in here, I'm just going to buy a full price holiday. Like, you'd be like, all right, mate, well...
Absolutely, loads of people do. There are loads of places that do sales like this because the idea is you get yourself so excited about the idea of having the holiday that by the time you're there, even though you didn't get it, you go, oh, well, that's life, but I've really built myself up for the idea of a holiday now. I'm going to go.
I just must think differently to everyone else. I'm not shilling out for a full price holiday if I've got an 80% off in my sights.
Yeah, but then for you, but in this modern world, sales and things work very differently. You'll always have another opportunity down the road. These people, like, they're going to their local travel agents. Like, holidays are a very, very different beast back then. I mean, travel agents in general. I mean, shit, when's the last time you saw a travel agent?
Yeah, let's do some more out. So we go away from that scene and we come into the flat and we are looking at Rodney with his feet in a bowl of hot water. I do wonder if people still do that. Do you still do that? Have you ever done that?
No, it definitely doesn't help. That's bollocks.
If your feet are really cold, then obviously it warms your feet up. But I think there's an old misconception that it somehow stopped a cold or warmed your whole body up. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, if your feet are cold, I'm sure it's a lovely thing to do, but I'm not sure I buy much beyond that. But, yeah, I don't know. I have soaked my feet if I've had sore feet, but not to warm myself up. That's weird. But that is a very... Again, that is a thing you see on TV from, like, 30, 40 years ago. That, yeah, like you say, I'm pretty sure no one does that anymore.
So after Rodney's not feeling it, but Dale comes... bouncing as he so often does, straight onto set, having a little jibe around, saying he's booked a holiday, singing a bit of Viva España.
Viva la España!
And letting the guys know that they're going on holiday, or letting Rodney know he's going on holiday. And Grandad pipes up asking where they're going. And Del sort of insinuates to Rodney that he hasn't actually added Grandad onto the trip.
Yeah, I mean, this is a pretty great moment. The little look, silent look between Delboy and Rodney is really good. And yeah, I mean, you think, of course they wouldn't invite Grandad. Like, you just think he'd be sound on his own in the flat, chilling. Like, why would they invite him on a summer jolly holiday? That's mad. But it's funny how he just assumes he's going along. And then they both feel so guilty instantly because he seems so chirpy about the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you just wouldn't think of it, but you'd really, really quickly sort of realise the error and be like, oh, definitely messed up here.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, of course they feel really bad. And when he does have that one moment, Grandad, where he goes, oh, Spain, I've been there before, which I feel like is a bit of foreshadowing in the ominous way that he says it. But straight away, he's very excited. He's like, oh, I've never been to Benidorm, though. So, yeah, bless him. Gets all excited, goes to make a Spanish omelette.
Yeah, so he goes to make a Spanish omelette, and Rodney and Dale have a little chat, and trying to figure out a way to basically let him down coolly or sensitively. And Dale says he can't do it because he'll break his heart. Rodney, you know, puffs his chest out and he's feeling confident.
All mouth.
And for me, for me, this is a great moment. For me, this really proves a great point for Dale. So Rodney walks in and we're expecting him to let Grandad down. And Dale just knows. He knows people. He knows what they're going to do. So many times he is anticipating something way before it happens, whether it's a scam or a deal, whatever. He's always sneaky and weaseling his way. Fun that he's essentially he's kind of portrayed as almost being thick, you know. He always messes up his French wrong and says his words wrong, you know. He's not a book smart guy, but his people skills and perceptions for people, he reads people like deck of cards, like, unbelievably. And this is a really good example of that, because the second Rodney's walked in the door, he's booking the third space, because he knows Rodney's going to crumble straight away. So he's already dealing with the situation before it's happened. I just thought that was brilliant. That is where Dale is just... he is intelligent and perceptive in those areas.
Yeah, I mean, he knows people and he definitely knows Rodney. I think that's the trick. I mean, one thing in this conversation, so he phones up Alec, the travel agent, and I meant to look it up and forgot moments, but he said to him, I'll pop that kite around to you tomorrow. Did you hear that?
Yeah, no idea. I couldn't be bothered to look into it. I looked into a couple of things in this episode, but that could be so many things. It's sometimes... the context doesn't give you enough to be able to really research it very well, and then you have to spend 15 minutes going into
it. I assume it's money, but
maybe it just could be, it could actually be a kite, you just don't know.
I think there's one thing I'm fairly confident it isn't. It's a kite. Because why would he be passing him a kite? But yeah, there was something there. But there we go. That's it. They're ready to go a holiday.
So Rodney tucks up Del again. So there's a bit of banter going backwards and forwards. We've had the card and now Rodney's basically said he doesn't like Spanish omelets. So Del's going to have the whole thing. And we get back to a nice bit of physical comedy as Del stamps his foot into the bucket, which is a really good moment and a really good shot, because I rewound it and watched it, and he doesn't glance at it the whole time, so he just knows where it is, and there's not a lot of margin for error for stamping in that bowl. So a really good shot by David Jason there.
And what you really don't want to do is stand on the edge of the bowl and tip it over. Because then if you've got to reshoot the scene, that's going to be an absolute bloody nightmare. Go water everywhere. So, yeah, that is a good shot.
And then we get into a little bit of music and a montage. So, obviously, a bit hit and miss. I was very curious if you liked this montage. We know that you've had your opinions.
One thing I liked about this montage was it featured some fantastic music, which listeners may recognise.
Just in the background, we've got Mungo Jerry. I don't think we've ever really addressed it, but I think we have to obviously thank Mungo Jerry for the music, which we've kind of adopted as our theme tune. And I was just curious, just because, to have a little look into Mungo Jerry, because I didn't know much about them. But Mungo Jerry is actually the band's name, not the dude. I actually assumed that it was the dude.
Yeah, totally.
But the dude's name is Ray Dorset. Hello, Ray. Thanks for the great tunes. And the initial tune sold like 23 million worldwide. It was massive. And I actually watched a little video from the late 90s in an interview. And he was a really like proper down-to-earth, humble guy. He's English. And he actually reminded me a lot of Shane. You all know Bob, which is one of our good friends' dads. Just a really nice, smiley, happy, good, cool dude. And he was saying, like, last year it was in 9 films and load of products and stuff, and he's basically just lived off that one tune. And he said he's just
very
so cool.
Usable,
that it's
usable, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. And he just said it's so happy that it's like an anthem for the summer, and it brings up so many feelings and stuff for different people in different scenarios. And it just works on so many levels. Hats off and thanks to Mungo Jerry for our tune and slipping it in there. Wicked tune.
Do you remember that it was in this episode that song came up? Because I hadn't, and it came up and I was like, oh yeah, shit, it was this is the episode that song's in, which you'd think we would know more off by heart, given it's been our theme tune for, 12 episodes or whatever on.
Sometimes I'm just on the edge of remembering, like I know it, but I don't know it. I guess it's hard to explain. I wasn't surprised that it happened, but I was also like, oh yeah. So I wasn't expecting it, but it felt completely like normal when it came on, and then I was like, yes, Mungo.
Yeah,
what do you think of the montage anyway?
Yeah, I didn't mind the montage. It was right. I could see why they did it, and I think it was quite effective because you can't have them go on holiday and have them not like be any holidayness. But then they had a story to get to. They had to set up how they get to Spain. They then have the story at the end, so there just wasn't a lot of time. So I kind of sympathise with that. I mean, the best part of the montage was obviously Del Boy's outfit. He's wearing these bright red
trousers.
Flared trousers, which are just incredible. I mean, he wears some pretty gauche stuff anyway, but this feels like Del Boy on holiday, so you can always turn your weird, like, extreme outfits up to 11 when you're on holiday. Like, that's the time to bring out the silk shirts and the linen suits and stuff, and this is Del Boy's linen suit equivalent.
Yeah, the eccentricities get a little bit more eccentric.
Absolutely.
But I like it. For me, at this point, the montage has been used 3 times. I've liked all the applications that it's there for. And it's almost become a bit of a thing now because it's happened a few times. Even though I don't really recall it happening a lot after this.
I'm pretty sure this is the last one. I really do.
But it has this like early Only Fools nostalgia about it, because it's happened three times in a 15 episodes, it kind of fits into that box nicely. So now it wasn't a one-off. They've used it a few times. For me, they've used it really well every time. So, yeah, it's good. I like it. I like that it belongs to early Only Fools and Fools. There might be more, but I can't recall them.
No, I think the Big Brother, the Cash and Curry, and this, I'm pretty sure they're the only three, but we'll see if we bump into any more. I mean, the one thing that was a bit odd about the montage is, of course, they meet these girls, they're dancing, they're doing the old oops upside your head on the dance floor thing, and, you know, having a whale of a time. But they bring them back to the bedroom, and then they see Grandad and his teeth in the glass, and that's the big laugh. But it's like, surely they warned them that their Grandad was going to be there in this tiny room with a basically space for three beds. Like, surely they warned them.
No, they're clearly too drunk. But I actually said the same. I said they've clearly dropped a ball here. I mean, they've even called it before they got there in the flat.
Yeah.
They said, we're going to get a couple of girls back and we're going to get there and he's going to have his false teeth in the room. Like, they should have been so aware that this might happen.
What an error. I mean, they're obviously on holiday. They definitely have their own hotel room. I mean, come on, guys. Pull your shit together.
Yeah. Not a great one, but a good little laughing end to the montage on that one. Really like that scene. Because if you are the best, but you don't ask
questions, then brother, I'm your man. So here we are on the beach the next day. Dale lounging out in his leopard print Speedos. I mean, that's quite a look. And you got Grandad staring off sort of melancholically into the ocean.
Do you know where this was filmed?
I do, actually. It was Bournemouth, right? I did check.
Yeah, you said you didn't research much for this one, so I was thinking you might have done absolutely nothing, but
I seem to remember them hearing an interview where they talked about it and stuff, and how they had to like adjust all the cameras and stuff to make it look bright and sunny and nice when it was just a cold, crappy day in Bournemouth.
They had actually initially planned for it to be filmed in Spain. But the BBC ran out of budget, so they settled for the extremely cold Bournemouth, and to transform the freezing scenes of Dorset, they just turned the lights up massively, and just went really, really bright. But from what I believe in most of the other stuff that is location shooting in future episodes, they do actually go there, like Miami and Monte Carlo. But yeah, this one was in sunny old England.
Yeah, I mean, this is very early day Only Fools, so that, of course, there's not much budget there. So yeah, I'm surprised they even thought that they could go and film an episode in Spain. Like, it's the second series of a show that's not doing particularly great. So yeah, that would have been expensive, I'm sure.
A little bit of banter, and yeah, Grandad has been a little bit weird. He's just sort of staring off. He doesn't seem to be having much of a good time. Rodney shouts that he's got a beer from him, and chucks the ball and knocks off his hat. And
which is a great shot, by the way.
Oh, yeah. From, I mean, Delboy. Clearly didn't actually make it, but yeah, it was a great shot.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he doesn't even really sit up, like, you can never throw that accurately, especially those crappy light plastic beach balls. To get that kind of a shot from what is clearly a good sort of 10 metres, I mean, no way on this earth.
Grandad complains that he could have blinded him. And he decides to go off for a walk.
I don't want nothing to drink. Going back to the hotel and have a fiesta.
I'm pretty sure that is the reason I used to get them confused all the time when I was a kid, was because of this episode. I used to get the terms fiesta and siesta mixed up all the time, and I'm pretty sure it's Grandad's fault.
There's lots of those, I think, where they've massively misquoted something that I probably used wrong for a really long time.
Yeah, like way much longer than you'd like to admit.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So he goes off, and Rodney and Dale remark that he is a little bit off and a bit weird and a bit sheepish. And that's the end of the beach, and we head over to the pool. And this whole exchange is just mad. I decided to make my life a little bit easier, something I haven't ever actually done before. But because the French here is just a bit mad, and my French isn't that good, I actually went and downloaded the script for the episode, which I think I'm going to do a bit more of, because it makes this translation so much easier.
Smart.
So he notes this girl at the bar, and goes over. And why he starts speaking French, I'm not sure. I think maybe she had spoken French.
She bumps into a girl at the bar. They speak French to each other. And that's when he eyes her and then goes over and starts talking French.
So the conversation translated goes like this. Good evening, says Dell. Are you staying at this hotel, she says. And he says, smoking prohibited. Have you got a beanie? Gets a bit lost here. He speaks three different languages in once and says dos in Spanish, de bonnet, which I'm not sure. De bonnet, when I actually translated it, is a beanie, like some sort of head, hat. So I'm not actually sure what he's asking for. But
like,
anyway.
Like a bonnet, like a kid's bonnet, maybe? Like that?
Yeah, yeah. But then he's asking for a drink. Bonnet. So I don't know.
Yeah. He said bonnet de douche before. That's another Del Boy thing, I think. I think bonnet comes off
a bit. Yeah, that's a shower hat. That is bonnet de douche.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
He says, por favor, back to Spanish, and then Dankeschön, which is German. She asks him, which part of France are you from? And his response is,
ah oui, oui, je t'aime, je t'adore. Sur les ponts d'Avignon.
Yes, I love you, I adore you, on the bridge of Avignon. just absolutely just wading through, no idea how. I don't know how he's even trying to pull it off. And she walks past the big tall guy, saying that she's got a little bit bothered by the French fella, and Del turns up with two drinks.
This makes no sense, because she clearly speaks French, so she knows that Del is talking complete bollocks. So why does she then say to the guy, I'm stuck with this French fella? What, you mean that guy speaking French nonsensically in an English accent? She's like, surely she knows.
Yeah, but maybe it's just like so crazy that it's, you know, we all know weird people that say some weird stuff to girls. Like, it could just be so weird that it's funny. Like, I don't know.
I think the smoking prohibited bit is the bit that really sells the fact that he's mental.
And we get and he walks up with two drinks and he says je suis frontières, which is I'm borders. Just absolute madness. The guy stands up and he's like a million feet tall and looks down, and you quite and you just see Del's, I think the cigar drops and his
cigar drops and everything. Which is very like it's very like Freudian, isn't it, with a cigar.
Yeah. And the guy goes, thank you, waiter. Which is just a really good line.
Yeah, it is very good.
But Del just quite literally bursts his bubble and puts his cigar out on his little Lilo chair thing.
Pretty apt revenge for the cock block there, I think. It's there. Although, to be fair, Del is definitely bothering this poor lady who has got absolutely no interest. So, to be fair, we're taking Del's side out of habit, but quite frankly, we should be on her side and the big bloke's side.
Del is often borderline sex pest.
Yeah, I think borderline is generous, but yes, agreed. I think you get away with it because it's the 80s for a start, so people aren't aware of it as then, so it doesn't seem like such a big deal. But also, he's our main character, and it's not, you're not meant to think he's an annoying sex pest. You're meant to think it's harmless fun. So anyone who's vaguely aware of that would realise that, yeah, it's meant to be a bit of fun.
You definitely got away with a lot more in the mid-80s as well. Like, I think about Ko West Young Man when they're talking to those two girls and he sticks his hand on her leg. Like, if you did that these days, I mean, there'd be a lawsuit. It's
like, yeah, absolutely.
It's like basically borderline rape or something. You can't do that.
No, I think, and that's the thing, but I think that those sort of things don't stand out to me so much because it's on TV. If it was in real life, then of course your reaction would be whatever the morals are of the time. But I know I'm watching it on TV with something made in the 80s, so I don't even question it because it's not displayed in that way. You're meant to think it's kind of harmless and fun. It's something you watch back like old James Bond films and you see, you know, Sean Connery be a massive sex pest. Even in those situations, like, you know, it's a different time, and the way it's presented is presented like the woman is happy that is happening, sort of thing. So it's all about context, And I think that's, I think, not something I worry about too much with Only Fools and Horses. There's been a couple of other examples where it's not the case that we've talked about, but I think for something like this, this is clearly Diablo having a bit of fun, and he is the butt of the joke, really, which I think is what helps get away with everything, because he's looked a Muppet and has been owned, so that helps.
Yeah, for sure, and Only Fools does change with the times, for sure, like as time goes on and, you know, the political correctness or whatever you want to call it moves, they move pretty well with it. I think, you know, in the medium and later series, there's still stuff that might seem out of place now, but at the time they are progressing with the social norms and what is generally acceptable. There's a couple of things that are questionable there, but realistically it does progress and mature with the times.
Yeah, definitely. But anyway, moving swiftly on, we get Rodney bursting in aggressively into the poolside area to announce that Grandad has been arrested.
So, scene 5, the jailhouse. My first impression was it was a really good-looking set. I don't know if the BBC just have a prison on hand. They probably did. I wouldn't be surprised.
They definitely do, actually. Come to think of it, that's why it's such a good set. This is a standard prison set. That's a good shout.
Yeah, and it looked really good for me. It's probably one of the best looking sets that we had. It genuinely felt like you were in a jailhouse in Spain, which is really, really good. They walk in to the escort of the guard, and he says, "Que vadis, señor?" Which is, "Where are you going?" Is the translation for that. But it's enough for him to get to go.
The whole thing is Spanish, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not like said it in French and then ended it with señor.
No, that's all Spanish. And Grandad's on the moan straight away, asking where they've been, took their time and all that sort of stuff.
It's all very, like, it's all argumentative and high tempers and everyone's confused and stressed. I mean, there's a lot going on. For about sort of 2 or 3 minutes, they're just kind of sniping at each other and it's all very random.
Yeah, I think it's a really stressful situation. I think I noted it a bit later, but, you know, they are on holiday. And they're probably not having a great one because Grandad's been there and so on. And now he's been arrested. Like, you just don't want to spend your holiday in a prison cell trying to sort
it's
out
not
something.
Ideal. Agreed.
And Dales has a great line.
Well, why did you get yourself arrested?
Keep your voices down. You'll get him chucked out of here.
which is a really well-written line. I like that.
I was going to say, they kind of meander back and forth for a little while until finally they kind of get to the meat and drink of this scene, and really the whole episode, it kind of comes down to this kind of the rest of this scene, and that is Grandad's very long story about what happened to him in Spain in 1936.
I something about Leonard Pierce, he's just got this really good way for delivering stories of the time. Like, I guess he probably was around during, you know, some of the stuff he's talking about anyway, but he gets into character really well, and just even when he's painting the picture about, you know, it was 1936 and, you know, the war was going on, all this other sort of stuff, he you genuinely believe it. Like, you really get taken back to it. He's got this really nice husky storytelling voice, and even though Rodney and Del have got no patience for the story, every time he's talking, like, I'm captivated by it. Even now, like, even though I know the whole story, like, it just takes me away. He should have told stories. He's bloody brilliant at it.
It's funny about that, because this is a scene that I think maybe when I was younger, I definitely thought dragged, and I had less appreciation for kind of Grandad's monologues. But then I think the other monologues I've enjoyed more, and I don't know if that was because this one was just longer and did drag a bit, or whether the constant interruptions and jokes from Rodney and Delboy, or that because they were joking about the fact that it was dragging on and he wasn't getting anywhere, which was funny, and I see why they had to break up the story with some of those jokes, but in a way it actually pointed out that it was dragging on a bit, and I don't know, there was a weird thing there that I wasn't entirely sure if I found it dragging on and it was annoying me, or not.
It also kind of makes it drag on more because they're interrupting. So the scene is dragging.
The whole thing takes forever. Like, this scene is really, really dragged out. I think it kind of has to be. I don't think you could do it any quicker. But, I mean, it is a long story.
I really like it. I think it's perfect. I think they break it up well. It does. You get the feeling of it dragging out, but it's not so dragging out that you're losing interest. I think it does exactly what it needs to do.
It's an insane story. So this thing that granddad apparently did, this man who you just assumed has lived on the same like crappy area of southeast London his entire life, has got this crazy outlandish story about him being a smuggler during the of guns during the Spanish Civil War. It's just crazy, and it comes out of nowhere, and the whole thing is shocking, but he does make it very believable, because like you said, he comes at it with that innocence that you do believe that he had this experience, because he knows it's insane, and he delivers it in a way that is like this series of unfortunate events.
Does he say how old he is?
No, he doesn't. He says it happens in 1936.
I'm not bothered to work it out, but yeah, but you get this idea of this air of the fact that they are young and stupid, essentially. But one of the interesting references on this, which I'm sure you won't know, he mentions early, he says, me and my mate Nobby Clark. And there's a little bit of an Easter egg there, because he's actually referencing, so Kenneth MacDonald, who is Mike the landlord, had a character in It Ain't Half Hot Mum in 1974, and he was a gunner named Nobby Clark, funny enough.
Nice little callback.
A little bit of an Easter egg.
Yeah, that would probably be a thing they'd call on, but it was interesting just because... Thinking about the age he was, I mean, it's in 1936, so it's about 50 years before the show went out. So I'm guessing he's late teens, which sounds about right.
Do we know how old Granddad is?
Yeah, he was 21, was Leonard Pierce's age in 1936. I don't know exactly how old Granddad is meant to be, but I think it's a fair assumption that it's basically the same as Leonard Pierce. So that would be the age that if you were going to do something mental like this, you'd do it, I guess, would be your late teens, early 20s. So, you know, the times fit quite interestingly. There's also, talking of Easter eggs, there's another little Easter egg in this story when Grandad says, us trotters have never been good sailors, which I thought was interesting because it's, you know, the only thing even close to a reference ever of Albert, who, of course, was the most unsuccessful of sailors.
Yeah, I read some like trivia stuff about that, saying that it was setting up the scene for Albert, and I think it's just coincidence more than anything. They didn't know that Albert was going to come along, and there was probably no part written for him. So
no, it's not setting it up, but it could have been an idea behind when creating Albert. It's like, right, what have we got to go on? That could have been something that popped into his head.
I was arguing with the fact that people say that it set it up, because I don't believe that it did. It's just a coincidence.
There was never a plan to have Albert, of course. That's obviously not a thing.
No, and I don't think that line would have actually stayed in anyone's mind to actually do anything with Albert. I just think it's two independent thoughts that just happened to be a coincidence. But they're going backwards and forth, and Grandad loses his place.
Oh, now where was I?
You and the fisherman's friend were under a tarpaulin in the lifeboat.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a great visual. I really like that.
I think the classic, the best line in there for the whole example of how this story was dragging out is my personal favourite, was when Rodney says, Grandad, should I make any plans for my future?
but all of a sudden they become really interested in the story when it takes a bit of a more of a sinister turn, and you know, Leonard Pierce delivers this line brilliantly.
And he offered us a job. He said he'd pay us to take his motor launch over to the Spanish coast and deliver a cargo.
What sort of cargo?
Guns.
And we were talking about our Leonard's legendary lines last week, and this is just all Grandad. He gets in a couple of lines here, and every single one of them is just brilliant. We've had a few laughs in there and quite a bit of physical comedy in this one. But for me, this is one of the biggest laughs.
Don't you worry, Jill. Leave it to me. Very nice. Very nice indeed.
Guns? You mean you were gun running in the middle of a civil war?
Well, that's the best time to do it, Robert.
But there is so many lines there which we could put as one of those legendary lines. He just gets a barrage of laughs through all this, intense sort of feelings and a bit of stress around. He's just dropping clangers all over the place.
It's there was another line which I think was a bit of a throwaway line, like there's not much of a reaction from the audience or anything, but actually I thought it was a really, really great line for explaining Dell and his thoughts on life. Is after he says they were selling to, you know, whichever side had the most money, Dell says to Rodney, well, you know, a conscience is nice, but business is business. And I think that's
that's
like a really, you could put that on like Dell's tombstone, you know, of that's how Dell viewed the world. Like he does know that conscience is important, but you know, business is business.
Yeah, survival of the fittest. It's funny, I didn't actually note that that line down, but it did really strike a chord with me when I heard it, for sure. It gets a little bit more serious again. There's turns going over the place. We get into torture here. Yeah. I mean, Grandad's talking about his mate being tortured.
It's pretty dark. They do this sometimes where they get really dark and the audience is like chuckling in the background. I'm like, you're talking about torture, right? This is really not actually funny.
They turn around the tempo quite quickly when Grandad says that he just basically spilled all the beans because he didn't fancy getting tortured.
Which is fair enough, really, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't know if you... I don't know if this is a break of character or if it's supposed to be there, but have a little look at 25 minutes and 5. I'm pretty sure Nicholas Lyndhurst has a smile rather than Rodney smiling, but during this to and fro he just has this little, it's quite an obvious smile. It could be the character, but I think it's actually a break of character, and I just thought it was quite funny. I was looking out for a couple on this because it was there was so many jokes going on.
Yeah, there's definitely a smirk. Yeah. There was a lot of, I don't know, I've never noticed this before, but there was a lot of there was one thing I almost didn't like about this whole scene, and it's never as fun, never fun to be critical. But there was a lot of this like two-man jokes between Dell and Rodney, where they were like setting each other up, and the whole thing did seem a bit rehearsed, over rehearsed at times. Oh, yeah, there was a fair bit of that with some of their jokes, where they were doing a bit of back and forth, and Rodney with his like, the stuff he was doing with his body, he seemed a little bit, you know, a little bit forced, a little bit, yeah, maybe just over rehearsed, and it was a bit odd. It felt a little bit more artificial and a little bit less natural. But I think part of that is because they're in this closed prison and there's very little else to look at or to distract or to interact with. And I think I think that presented a bit of a difficult challenge. I think with Nick Lyndhurst, he seems a little bit lost sometimes with his body and his face and stuff, what he should be doing. And so the things he's doing seem really, really like, oh, I'm now going to move my hand to here and do this and do that. And it was a little bit less natural.
That's a really interesting observation, because I didn't make it consciously, but subconsciously I did, I think. There were a few, because that smirk, for example, the reason I looked for it was kind of, I think it, there was a feeling of you were more watching actors portray or act out a story rather than being immersed within it. It must have been so subtle and subconscious, but I definitely picked up on some of that. It wasn't horrendous, but enough that it kind of, not the fourth wall was being broken, but it did feel like you were connecting with the actor a little bit rather than some of the character. But I think that's pretty rare that ever happens.
No, it's really rare, which is, I think, why it's kind of interesting and not such a bad thing to point out. But I do think the whole scene was a little bit like that. It was like that when they first walked into the room and they're arguing. I think it's because it's such a long scene, like I said, with nothing else in the room, and it does create a bit of an acting challenge for them. But, you know, we get through it. It's a very funny scene. But really, the kind of the highlight of the scene for me is when we are rejoined by Juan, who I really enjoyed. He goes up there with, like, the manager of the curry house and Mr. Chin, of just one of these really great small speaking support roles that I've just really enjoyed in a character I really remember.
Do you want to guess where he's from?
He's a Brummy, wasn't he?
He did look it up.
I did look. Yeah, because I was like, he looks Spanish to me. Like, he looked Spanish.
I thought not only did he look Spanish, but I thought that his accent, I wouldn't say it's classically Spanish, but it was good enough that I was like, I'm not 100% sold that he's English. I mean, he's doing a really good job. For me, I thought it was one of the best extra acts so far. And you're right, it does go up there with Mr. Chin and Babar Bhatti. Is that his name? Or is that somebody else? Babar Bhatti.
Well done. You pulled that out of nowhere. Well yeah. Played.
I can't not remember that name. It's wicked.
Yeah, this will have to be a thing that we come back to one day where we rank these guys, because there are many of these kind of these characters with this size of role.
Mm. But Anthony Jackson was his name. He did a few other notable roles in acting, but nothing too major. But hats off to Anthony, really nailed that. Got exactly what we needed.
It was this like drunken Spanish lazy thing that was really good, because it was so different to like a Andrew Sachs in Fawlty Towers sort of thing, which is before this, right? That's late 70s, I think, Fawlty Towers, and yeah. It's a whole different you know, way of talking, and you know, more kind of the lazy laid back kind of thing, which I really enjoyed. I thought it was great.
I think it's a real acting challenge, because he's essentially caricaturing a cliche, like that surely is like a cliche prison guard Spanish. So to try and pull that off in a way that it feels natural rather than overacted, I thought he did a really, really good job.
It could be really easily overacted, cheesy. And be really hammy and cheesy and just like, yeah, all over the place. But I think he gets it absolutely spot on. He's great. And, you know, Del Boy tries to bribe him the second he walks in. And then, you know, it turns out he didn't need to, because Granddad was about to get released anyway. Juan is very pleased to have the donation to the charity of his choice.
I mean, I think we shouldn't just gloss over that. I mean, he is pretty hardcore bribing a prison guard in prison in a foreign country. That's I mean, even of the time and the way he does it, you're setting yourself up for some pretty crazy stuff there. That is a big cojones move in anyone's
book. I think it's a dumb move, because there's no way.
It's stupid, yeah.
This low-level nobody is going to have any impact on whether or not Granddad gets out of there. So the whole thing is a complete waste of time. So yeah, it's mental that he does it.
Setting yourself up for potentially all sorts of bad stuff. It's a terrible move.
Yeah, I guess his assumption is this bloke is definitely bent and will take the money. But which I think is probably a fair kind of, you know, thing to like cliche to assume. But the idea that he could actually do anything useful, I just think is madness. But yeah, you know, it's a very Del Boy thing to do, is to throw money at it. I mean, this is not the first time he tries to throw money at a police officer or someone in law enforcement and have it batted away. But it's certainly something that Del Boy is very up for doing.
So, Juan pulls out a little clipboard with his release papers, which is a real good a visual hide that you don't see the whole time.
Yeah.
During the scene, and suddenly comes out, and it's just like, as if you didn't need the cue to say that he was actually leaving anyway. That's a really good, nice little visual.
The way he unfolds the paper as well. Like, yeah. It's very good. The timing of it all is really good.
And yeah, it turns out that Granddad's been done for jaywalking. So the whole thing has just been completely blown out of proportion and pointless. And we end in a rather unique way, quite a violent and confrontational way. I don't know, it does get a laugh, but it's just a weird way to end. Rodney says we've got to get something for his cuts and bruises. It is a nice bit of misdirection in regards to the comedy. And Dale says it's early yet, and they both like menacingly come in really close.
Yeah.
And have this like stiff upper lip, like, and their fists like, oh, I'm gonna do you sort of thing. And yeah, it was really unique. It worked, it was fine, but it was not like a lot of the other closes that we've had in the series.
I'd say it's a little bit like the Slow Buster Chingford, but I found it interesting that what I think made it funny was the way Leonard Pierce delivered his line, where, because it's said with such innocence, oh, I haven't got any cuts and bruises. Like, that's that was very good. I think that makes it funny. But then
it sounded like Winnie the Pooh then.
I don't know what that was. But I think that makes it very funny. But yeah, that little exchange, I think, was a good example of what we were talking about before, of seeming a bit weird and over rehearsed and kind of it's odd. I don't think it's a particularly great final laugh. I'm not sure how they could have done anything differently, but I feel like there was something better there.
I liked it. I think we need to stop making that a thing. We have got into this habit that I don't really like, of judging what the outro is like, and realistically, it isn't a bow on the end of the episode that it needs to be, or that we're making it out to be. So I think we need to move away from it a little bit.
I disagree. I think Only Fools and Horses is famous for its, this is a thing in all comedies, of course, but particularly Only Fools and Horses, is that final scene is often, you know, end on that big laugh, and many of those are the highlights of episodes. And we talked about before what John Sullivan will often do is you'll have the one big laugh that you think is the end of the scene, and then he'll, you know, he'll double down and he'll go again. And, like, you know, the interesting, you know, creative choice that is, and it's kind of really brave and cool. And so I think there's anything, you know, if it was a great, perfect ending, we'd sit here and talk about it for 20 minutes. So I don't think when it's one of the less good ones, there's nothing wrong with taking a minute to go, meh, could have been better. I'm aware I've taken more than a minute to make that point, but
yeah, I think the ones, again, like we've talked about this recently, but the whole hit and miss thing, you know, you're not, if you set yourself a bar that every single time it needs to be 200% a massive laugh, then you're going to suffer content in the rest of the episode, or you're not going to be able to execute it. There has to be, you can't have the payoff as the last line every single time. It would never work. Like, you would be expecting it too much. So the last scene does almost always is the payoff scene, but the last line doesn't necessarily have to be the end line. So I'm not looking for it to be that final moment all the time, and I think it needs to be a bit understated sometimes, because otherwise it just wouldn't fit in the tempo of the episode. He's the one who's driving me berserk. Why do only fools and horses work? La 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 la. So, series 2, episode 6, Never Rains. What's the whole picture? What are you thinking of the episode as a whole?
I think it's a solid like B. Like, it's one of the good episodes for sure. It's not one of the one or two best episodes. But I really enjoyed it. It was very different, obviously, because it's, you know, one of the only times they ever go abroad, you know, and the long prison scene was really different. So that I like those kind of episodes that have something very different about them. And so that's something I really enjoyed about this. And yeah, it was good. I don't think there was as many huge laugh out loud moments as Sun episode. Certainly wasn't one of the funniest, but it was a really good story. And yeah, nice payoff. You know, good side characters. Yeah, good, solid.
We were talking about the fact that these episodes are, at this latter part of Series 2, are all pretty iconic, memorable early episodes, and this one really does stand out for me. That as we progress through it, the locations and the storylines are getting more elaborate. We're getting more characters. We're going more places. And we have said a few times that the episode is different. But I think in this stage, they're all becoming different. You know, they're looking for fresh ideas. So it would almost be weird if it was just in the flat and just in the next head. Like if we're just staying in those places now, that would feel a bit more restricted. You know, they are getting a bit more, or John Sullivan's getting a bit more elaborate in what he knows he can achieve now, and that's great. I really like this episode because of the whole Spain thing, because you feel like you're actually in Spain when clearly you're not as well. I think it, even though I've talked about the fact that every episode is different, I do like this one because it is quite different.
Yeah,
gone full circle there.
There's no getting away from it. It's an unusual episode. It's fun. There's lots of Grandad, you know, that probably his longest ever monologue story. What's not to enjoy?
So, time to look forward to next week then, eh? What's what we got next?
So our next episode, it's a classic. We should, you know, it is A Touch of Glass.
Yeah, up there with probably the most iconic scene, by the most iconic. I think I actually don't like the episode almost at all.
Well,
I think
there's
a lot of
statement.
Things I dislike about it. I like the big idea that no one does know what's going to happen, but that is obviously brilliant. But I think there's a lot I don't like about the episode. I think one of the reasons is because the lady in it, Lady Ridgemere or whatever she's called, is just a bit of a dick. And you know, whenever there's a bit of a dick in the episode, it does. They play dicks pretty well, and there's something about it. I think I just don't look forward to seeing these characters, like the Paulines and the Slaters and stuff. You're just a little bit like, do you know what? Screw you, get off my awesome screen with Del and Rodney, you know?
Yeah, true. Yeah, she has got a touch of the Paulines about her. It's gonna be fun. It'd be fun to see if we come to this episode and you are the more critical one. That'll be fun. But it's an episode that everyone remembers. It's one that I'm sure many people will be, you know, looking forward to. So, yeah, looking forward to A Touch of Glass next week.
No guesses, I guess it's one guess at what our outro music's going to be this week.
Yeah, it's our first time outro being the intro, right? I'm assuming. I think it's the only song in the episode.
I've dropped it in twice already, but, you know, it's brilliant. This tune just lasts forever, so we're going to have it one more time. Hats off and thanks to Munko Jerry for In the Summertime. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Join us next week for A Touch of Glass. Thanks for the episode, Bob. Good fun. A few struggles, but got through it.
We did indeed. It was fun.
Catch you next week. Cheers, guys.
Thanks. Bye.
Is an awkward close always going to be like our thing?
Apparently. Thanks very much for listening to us today. If you want to get in contact, you can send us an email at onlyfoolsbrothers@gmail.com. We also have a Twitter page, onlyfoolsbros.
And we're also on Facebook at @onlyfoolsbrothers. And just a little mention out, if you do go to our Facebook page, we've had a little bit of support from a page or two, a couple of Only Fools and Horses groups. One just called Only Fools and Horses. You can see that through our shares, and also Only Fools and Horses fan page. Both let us share some of our work there and had great support, so go and check them out. Some real good banter and nostalgia that goes on through the guys in the group there. It's always fun to have a look, and sometimes we grab a little bit of material from there. So thanks for the support.